Song of the Road, A True Shaggy Dog Story by James Bateson Male. Chapter 1. The Wildcat of Dartmoor. There have been widespread reports of a large wildcat roaming Dartmoor. The beast is ghostly white, a panther by all accounts, with flaming orange eyes, a demon cat, straight from Hades. I can verify these accounts. I was the one who released it. His name is Benjamin. We arrived late to the house sit, just outside of Dartmouth. It is a grand, perfectly square Georgian property, set in a steep-sided valley, surrounded on all sides by green hills. We shouldn't have been late. The car was packed the night before, and we were all up at 5 a.m. It was a brutally cold night. The ice was thick on the windshield. It's early January. There are people sleeping rough through this, I thought, with a shudder. I'm in a precarious position myself. We had a warm roof over our head, thankfully. Although, from today, it will be the last regular roof we'll have over our heads for quite some time, unless you count the car. We are hitting the road and heading into uncertainty, willingly and with enthusiasm, but nevertheless out of necessity. The bloody car won't start, I come crashing back into the house. What? Lottie is shoveling food into Dinny, our daughter, who's 4 and a little bit, and the baby is crying, as usual. He has colic. The car, it won't start. It won't even turn over. It's totally dead. Shit. The aging but magnificent Volvo estate, let's give it the starring role it deserves, is the last asset I own, or that is in my name. Technically, it's half Lottie's, as it was given to both of us as a wedding present. Thanks, Gavin. Much appreciated. Regardless, it's so cold out there that it's not for starting. For the first time ever. Today is day one of our road trip, road life, and we are due at our first house sit in 5 hours. The beginning of our great adventure, one born of adversity. The new tenants, renting out our house, arrive at 9 a.m. The kitchen needs cleaning and the baby is still crying, as always. I'll call the breakdown people, I announce to the disinterested party in the kitchen. It'll be fine, I add, reassuring no one except myself. The breakdown people have a tracking app so I can see their progress. And I can wait in the house to keep warm. I watch the blip that represents our saviour as it circles around the outskirts of Ely. It never gets any closer. We're on the clock here, I keep repeating, to myself. The blip just circles around, unheeding of my pleas. Around it goes. I don't know it yet, but this is a prophecy of what's to come later in the day. The universe is winking at me. The gods enjoy a joke as much as the next woman. I go downstairs to get a cup of tea and then back up to the bedroom, where I can see the car parked opposite, and check the blip for the 100th time. There's a new message on the app. It says our breakdown person has been diverted to another job. Ours has been cancelled. I rush outside to the car in a bit of a flap. A passerby informs me a breakdown van was just here, but left. I call them up and am informed that he was there and called, but I didn't pick up, so he's been assigned to a new job. Ours is cancelled and will need rebooking. It's now another 2 hours wait. I am most ungracious when receiving this news, but there are no missed calls on my phone, I inform the operator. It's a bad signal area. He must have given it all of 2 seconds trying, I shout, tending toward scream. I am outside in the freezing cold and just trying to keep my kids alive, I embellish, just a little. It'll be a 2 hour wait, they repeat. Eventually, we get on the road and we are running very late. On the last few twisty miles into Dartmouth, our baby boy, Dacre, throws up in his seat. Makes a change from crying, I suppose. Then he throws up again all over Lottie. We arrive at the house sit, heavily puke-scented, and our hosts are now late for their flight. They're going sailing in Thailand. Sounds sweet. This is a trip they are keen not to miss. We smile, grimace at one another as they run through a quick introduction to the pets. Then they fly out of the door. Their car starts just fine, I note. Maybe I'm imagining it, but I can hear them cursing us for at least 30 minutes after departure. Our great adventure is underway. One of their pets is an enormous white panther named Benjamin, who, despite his ferocious looks, is actually easygoing. He's a Maine Coon cat, nearly all white with streaks of ginger. Benjamin is far and away the biggest cat I've ever seen, about the size of our little girl, and could easily eat her for breakfast, after toying with her for a while to soften her up a bit. Benjamin is also a house cat, but not out of personal choice. He is kept inside against his will, possibly because he must be hugely valuable, or possibly because he can cover 5 miles in half an hour, if let out, as the owners informed me. And they've recently moved in, so he doesn't really know his way around yet. But Benjamin feels the call of the wild. You can see it in his orange eyes. He wants out. There is an airlock-type arrangement to be used between the front door and the inner porch. He's wearing a tracker, which only the owners have access to. They showed me the trace of his movements on their phone. It showed a mess of red lines, an almost artistic ball of wool, all within the confines of the computerized rendition of their house. I've got a bad feeling about this. A couple of hours later, I make a mess of the airlock arrangement, and Benjamin slides gracefully past me. He came out of the dark within and then stops just outside the door, free, and turns to look at me. We both stand motionless, eyes fixed on one another. He is less than a meter from me. I chose to lunge first, pointlessly, and Benji is off. He is not only immensely valuable and huge, but also immensely fast, a truly lithe, wild thing. A creature like that should be free to hunt, I try to justify to myself as I lose sight of him. It's in his nature. Lottie is furious. As I trudge hopelessly through the muddy stream at the bottom of the valley, I imagine the owners settling into their seats. I imagine they've made the flight with seconds to spare, after a sweaty and frantic airport rush. Their chilled champagne has just been served. Angus, who obviously dotes on this animal, picks up his phone for a last pre-flight check. He glances at the tracking app and sees Benjamin's red blip 15 miles from the house and moving fast. Moving at the speed of, well, a panther. A great big white one with a ginger streak. Fucking cat, I think to myself as I see all this playing out. My marriage is going to fail because of a gigantic fucking cat, I continue out loud now. I'm conveniently ignoring, for the moment, all the other contributing factors that can cause marriages to fail. My contributing factors. This is not a great start to our adventure. I wonder if the gods would be kind enough to grant me a fatal, but not too painful, heart attack. It certainly feels like one is brewing. But no, I will die another day. They will toy with me as cats toy with mice, or as Benjamin could toy with my daughter. Where are you, Benji? I plead to him directly, familiarly. I can't believe I let him out. A little more self-awareness is what I need, what most everyone needs, I'd say, looking around the world. But I'm too busy being angry or scared for all that. Fear can become a full-time occupation. The hours are ridiculous and the pay is terrible, but hey, it's a job. Just try not to pass all of this on to the kids. They fuck you up, your mum and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. They fill you up with their faults and add some extra, just for you. These lines echo around every parent's brain, knowingly or not. They are certainly in mine, and since we're now on the road and I'm careering wildly out of control, they're probably pretty apt. Thanks very much for that, Philip fucking Larkin. Thanks for planting those weeds, you bastard tyrant. But we all know he's got a point, and that he was just brave enough to point it out, what we already knew. So really, thanks very much for that, Philip lovely Larkin. Because maybe, and it's only a maybe, this is the best thing that could happen for us, for me. Maybe this is a perfect wake-up call. The whole thing, I mean, not the escapee panther. Back at the house and much later on, Benji saunters in with a satisfied look. There's been murder done on the moors tonight. Blood has been spilt. The next morning, after a fitful night, I nervously creep downstairs. First job is an animal headcount. Two dogs, one permanently frightened budgie, and Benji, my nemesis and white whale. All present and correct. Later, we take the dogs for a walk along Blackpool Sands Bay, where there is no sand. It's a pebble beach. Come back in a million years if you want sand. On a beautiful winter's day, the horizon before us is vast and beckoning. Dinny is loving it. She is skipping in and out of the water with her new doggy friends. Lottie holds my hand whilst Dacre sleeps on my chest. For the first time since we left home, a wave of gratitude washes over me. It washes through the pebbles of my heart, rolling one over another. And the waves on the beach make that lovely, tumbling, pebble-rushing water noise that I can't quite describe. But you know what I mean. Two nights later, in a storm, I am woken by an alarming banging. The door of the study has blown open in the night and is thudding against the brickwork. It's ill-fitting and won't lock. Benji is out. Freedom again. Looking into that dark, storm-wracked sky, I knew the gods were toying with me. And to them, I let out a barbaric yowl of defiance. This is the song of the road. Come, ye mighty gods, let's fucking dance.